the Appeal Tribunal. Yes. So, without any waste of time, let me check first. What I want to suggest to the committee is that we are going to allow 1 hour for each, 1 hour for presentation, questions, clarifications for each presentation. That means we've got two hours, one for NDA to do everything and 1 hour for the Appeals Tribunal to do everything. So what I want to check with the committee members, whether you want us to allow both a presentation to be presented, then go to questions and clarifications and comments later. I want your... Yes, Honorable Mashamint?
I will propose that they do one presentation and then we interact with it and then we go to the other.
Any seconder for that? Seconded. Thanks very much. Let's go straight to NDA to make its presentation. Oh, the minister has sent her apology. Both minister and the deputy minister, they are in the cabinet meeting today. So we've got there. I'm sure they will be accepted those apologies. If the committee accepts, can we move also the DG of the department? Now, NDA, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Viola Ntlapo, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the National Development Agency. We appreciate the opportunity to come and present with regards to the projects that we work with in the rest provinces. We will be taking you through the presentation, which will cover first of all, a number of areas just to give the perspective in terms of how we identify projects and then later zoom into the real projects and also reflect on the allocation to province in terms of the budget. And we will end by drawing attention to the challenges that we have and the intervention plans that we have put in place. I'm with my colleague. First of all, we are here with the board member, Mr. Madela, who is seated on the far right. And next to him is the company secretary, Ms. Mubeng. And then on my left-hand side, it's Mr. Mukhano, Ruben Mukhano, who will be taking us through the presentation. Mr. Mukhano is the executive manager in terms of the development management. He's leading that portfolio. I would like to hand over to him, and we are accompanied by Ms. Sajiluka from the National Department of Social Development. Yes, and we have let me introduce himself. Thank you very much. I'll now hand over to Mr. Mukhano to do the presentation. Thank you, Honorable Prime Member.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. This is the structure of the presentation. I am not going to dwell a lot on the introduction and the NDA mandate vision, but I will give some emphasis to area number 4, which is NDA strategic goal and purpose. I will also speak to the high-level budget. I will spend some time explaining the NDA project cycle, and I will speak specifically on the issue of how do communities out there access NDA funding. I will share information regarding the NDA active projects. I will explain the allocations for 2011 and 2012, and I will conclude by talking about current challenges and intervention plan. Chairperson, the NDA strategic plan, as has been presented to the committee, is anchored on a number of strategic considerations. The first one, obviously, is the National Development Agency Act, 108 of 1988, the Millennium Development Goals, the 5 government priorities, 12 government outcomes, and out of the 12 government outcomes, we have selected 4, the government-wide program of action, the provincial growth and development strategies, as well as local economic development programs. The mandate, accordingly, is supposed to contribute to the strategic imperatives that I've just outlined. Our mandate primarily is to contribute towards the eradication of poverty and its causes by granting funds to civil society organizations for the purposes of carrying out projects and programs aimed at meeting development needs of poor communities, as well as strengthening the institutional capacity of civil society organizations involved in direct service provision to poor communities. The secondary mandate is to promote consultation, dialogue, and sharing of development experience between civil society organizations and relevant organs of state. We are also expected to debate on development policy and undertake research and publications aimed at providing the basis for development policy. I am not going to dwell into the vision, mission, and values, Chairperson. We have explained this before to the committee. We have, in this current financial year, just one strategic goal as the agency. And that strategic goal is to leverage strategic partnerships to eradicate poverty to enable communities, poor communities, to achieve sustainable livelihoods. And the purpose of us doing this is to improve the quality of life of the poor to foster self-reliance. This strategic goal, Chairperson, is supported by 6 strategic objectives. The first strategic objective is to build and enhance the capacity of CSOs to enable them to carry out development work effectively. The second objective is to grant funds, facilitate and manage poverty eradication programs. The third objective is to influence policies, practices, and strategies through comprehensive research and knowledge management. The fourth objective is to mobilize and leverage resources. Strategic objective 5 is to position the NDA as a premier development agency. And the last objective is to promote and maintain organizational excellence and sustainability. Chairperson, the following constitute the thematic area of focus in grant making, because our understanding is that today we are talking mainly about projects and programs. So when we talk about projects and programs, the areas of emphasis are around strengthening civil society organizations, early childhood development, rural development, food security, and economic development. There is cross-cutting issues of youth development, women empowerment, HIV and AIDS, people with disabilities. And let me just spend 3 minutes to talk about these focus areas. Why strengthening civil society organizations? This is very critical because worldwide, it is recognized that civil society organizations can be effective partners in eradicating poverty. In our country, some 10 years ago, a study was conducted that demonstrated that we had almost 95,000 civil society organizations in the country. My guesstimate is that at the moment we should have about 45,000 to 50,000. The Department of Social Development has just over 50,000 registered non-profit organizations on its database. So when we talk about development in the country, we can't talk about development without recognizing the pivotal role that civil society can play in eradicating poverty. And when we talk about civil society in our context, we are talking non-profit organizations as we understand them, community-based organizations, faith-based organizations, and we've also included cooperatives in this definition of civil society. Our second area of focus is early childhood development. We believe, as an agency, that the best investment that you can make in the country is to ensure that at least your children have a head start in terms of their future. And we believe that if, as a country, we galvanize, organize around early childhood development, we would be positioning our children for a better life into their future. And the specific role of the NDA around early childhood development is threefold. The first one is strengthening the capacity of ECD sites. And Chairperson, I'm saying ECD sites advisedly because an ECD does not equal to a center, in other words, a creche. There are different ways in which ECD is provided in the country, and what we are saying is that it's important that we strengthen the leadership and management capacity of those ECD sites. The second area, Chairperson, is to ensure that these ECD sites have a consistent source of nutrition. In other words, what we are also doing is to support food gardens around these particular ECD sites that we are supporting, because it is not prudent only to support the leadership and management side and ignore the fact that most of these children come from poor families and they need to be fed whilst they are at this site. The third and fourth area which we have entered into by default, but albeit temporarily, are the areas of improving the qualification of ECD practitioners, at least up to NQF level 4. The reason for this is that, yes, we understand the policy framework to imply that from 0 to 4 is the Department of Social Development, grade R is the Department of Education. However, our experience on the ground is that it does not matter if you strengthen the leadership and management capacity and provide nutrition, but you have ECD practitioners who are not capable and competent to provide cognitive stimulation to these kids, we are not taking the country forward. And this is an area that we have entered, but this is not an area where we want to stay, because we acknowledge that there are critical players, social development and Department of Education, that have to be playing in this area. The last area is infrastructure. It is incumbent upon an agency like the NDA to ensure that as we strengthen leadership and management capacity, as we provide a source of constant nutrition, as we improve the qualifications of ECD practitioners, we are also able to meet the norms and standards in terms of the infrastructure for learning to happen. It does not help when you have an ECD site where learning happens in a shack. It's important for us to get involved in that area, acknowledging, though, that the area of ECD infrastructure is also in Section 4 of the Constitution. It's actually a competency of local government. So this is an area also by default that hopefully when we have stabilized, we will then expect the critical players to play their role there. The third area, Chairperson, is rural development, and rural development in the broadest sense. Our understanding is that rural development is not agriculture. However, agriculture happens to be the mainstream of rural development. And as you will see later on, Chairperson and Honorable Members, most of the projects and programs that we support are in agriculture, for obvious reasons. And coupled with the issue of rural development is food security and economic development. I think I will explain those as we move along. Chairperson, the issue of resources for the NDA is raised at many levels. We happened to attend the Women's Parliament last week, and one of the issues that we picked up was around access to funding. And I think in the context of NDA, it's important to share with the committee that out of the budget that we have in this current financial year of 161 million, 86 million of that will be going into direct grant funding. We are presenting this slide so that you appreciate the magnitude of the resources that are available at NDA resources. So 86 million out of the 161 million will be going into direct project funding. And you'll see a breakdown later on that indicates that actually out of the 86, there is 8 million that is dedicated specifically for capacity of these civil society organizations that we fund. This is the slide that I'm talking about. The 86 million is divided into point one and two. Point one is to build and enhance the capacity of CSOs to enable them to carry development work effectively. And number two is to grant funds, facilitate, and manage poverty eradication programs. If you add the two amounts, they will add up to the same 86 million that I spoke about earlier. Now, here is the crux. The question is, how do communities out there access NDA funding? And I'm just going to take a bit of time on this because I think this is probably the area that honorable members are very interested in your respective provinces. Before the beginning of each financial year, we are required by the PFMA to come up with a strike plan. Our process starts around September, October of the previous year. So what we will be doing from next month is to say, where is government going in terms of its program on poverty? When we took the decision last year, there were two primary considerations. The first one was that we agreed that as an agency, there is an increasing role that we need to play in rural development. And in that context, we entered into a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform around where we should be focusing in the next 2 to 3 years. And in that memorandum of understanding, there are 9 nodal poverty areas that have been identified, as you would know them. In Northern Cape, it's Limpopo, Limpopo, Moyeshe, Western Cape, Desselstorp, Jacobsdal in the Free State, and so on and so on. At that time, Gauteng didn't have a nodal area, but we noticed that now there is Devon and others that have been added to the CRDP side. So we focus on those 9 nodal points. Rural Development also gave us a list of 160 wards, poverty wards, and we worked with those wards. We now know that social development has about 1,100 wards. And rural development, of course, we are going to have to work with these wards moving forward. But the basis for our planning last year was the 9 nodal points, 9 CRDP nodes, plus the CRDP wards and sites, 160 of them. So everything that we have committed or that we are going to...
I'm going to use some acronyms. We are not working with you, so we don't know the acronyms.
My apologies, Chairperson. The Department of Rural Development has come up with a comprehensive rural development program. It's called CRDP. Out of the comprehensive rural development program, they've defined comprehensive rural development nodes. And these are the nodes that I'm talking about. There are 9. They have further identified comprehensive rural development sites. 160, when they started, that figure is increasing at an alarming figure. So that's what I'm talking about. So what has been done is that in a province, they will say Free State, Jacobsdal, and other areas, they will say in Mpumalanga, it's Mkhondo, and in Mkhondo, it's what X and that. Similarly, in the Eastern Cape, they would identify those wards. And these are the poorest wards in the country, as identified by rural development. So we thought, as an organization, that the basis for our programming should be informed by those wards. In year one, let's focus on those wards that have been identified. Chairperson, so in supporting those wards that have been identified, there are two approaches that the NTA uses. The first one is called program formulation. The second one is called request for proposal, RFP. In all the programs that I've mentioned, and I'll talk about them later on, this is what we do. Phase one is that we identify and prioritize poverty pockets. And the way we identify and prioritize poverty pockets is in relation to what I've just explained to you. So in prioritizing and identifying poverty pockets, we have used 9 comprehensive rural development nodes plus the 160 and sites that we've been given by rural development. So that's one. Number two is that we then have to go into those areas and get into a process of social mobilization. In other words, we will then go to Jacob Stahl and say, who are the civil society organizations that are active in Jacob Stahl? Identify them. If there is traditional leadership, I suspect not in Jacob Stahl, we will engage with traditional leadership in every aspect and say, these are the players, then we engage with them around what is it that can be done to improve the quality of life in this area. In consultation with the people, we don't go in and say, by the way, we haven't passed a crash around the corner, we think there must be a crash. That's not how development works. It's not sustainable. So what we do is to jointly identify priorities and needs with the different stakeholders in that community. When we have done that, we then assist that community to package whatever they want to do in a proposal that will then be funded by the NDA. One of the things that we have learned the hard way is that we must assist our communities to be able to come up with these proposals, because very often resources go to those organizations that have the capacity to put up sophisticated proposals, and that's not what we want to see. So we get involved at that level. After that, the projects then come to, previously it used to be the board, now it's EXCO of the NDA. The EXCO of the NDA has the authority to approve up to 3 million, and the board anything beyond 3 million. And then, of course, we get into the grant disbursement, we monitor, and so on and so on. This is the full cycle that I'm outlining to the honorable members. I am going to talk about the challenges of these projects that we are talking about, because I just don't want to give an impression that everything is perfect. Everything is never perfect. This is the broad criteria that we use for support of this project. They must demonstrate the ability to be effective, and that is the extent to which a project may achieve its stated objectives and other socially desirable outcomes. They must demonstrate potential for poverty impact, and that is the potential to improve the quality of life of poorer communities and individuals. There must be semblance of sustainability assessed at approval level. Although you can't guarantee sustainability, but you can just look at a project and a program and say, is this likely to be sustainable or not? And when I talk sustainability, I'm not only talking financial sustainability. I'm also talking programmatic and institutional sustainability. Because there are programs that may not be financially sustainable. For instance, if you support an ECD program, we are not expecting an ECD program to be an income-generating project, because it's premised on a different philosophy. It's about delivering a social service. It's not about generating income. We also look at the extent to which these projects can be replicated, adapted, not adopted. And in every program or project that we support, we look at the potential to establish partnerships with private sector partners and local government. And I must say, Chairperson, We've been receiving a lot of support from private sector partners around some of these projects. Private sector partners like Old Mutual Foundation, Masizane Fund, Kumba Resources, and APSA, and many others that have come on board around this particular issue. I've explained the models of grant making, which was the RFP and program formulation, and I'm just going to move into the provincial spread of our projects to date. Chairperson, the NDA currently has 325 projects in the community. The reason is 70 of the 325 have been paid their last tranche and are currently in the process of being closed. That's why it's 255 instead of 325. That's the status quo. And the price is what you see. The collective value of those projects is 299 million, and the balance last year, this is the breakdown of the projects that we supported. 43 projects, and we committed 42.9, rounded off to 43 million. And the question that the committee will ask is, why 43 million when we've been talking about amounts in the region of 70, 80 in terms of commitment? This is an issue that we will report to the committee when we present our annual report, but without preempting what we will say when we present the annual report, the issue is that the NDA funding in 2009-10 was cut by 42% by National Treasury. And when that happened, it meant that we also had to cut the amount that could be directed to projects. This is what happened. But when we present our annual report, we will speak more to that particular issue. The allocation for 11-12, which is this year, is as follows, Chairperson. This is the 78 million that I'm talking about. And this is the spread. I'm reminded, Chairperson, of a committee member, of, I think it's from Gauteng, who raised the issue of the poverty index last time. And we have duly corrected that to reflect what it is, which is population index. This is the same population index that we used, and this is the breakdown that you have, and this is the figure. As you can see, the Eastern Cape, KZN, and Limpopo continue to get a lion's share of the allocation, and that the Northern Cape continues to receive the least resources, and we understand why. The population in the Northern Cape is few, but the area is vast. But it continues to receive the least resources. What we are hoping for, Chairperson, is that perhaps maybe after the census this year, when the results are released in a year or two, we would now have a new population index that we can use that is much more equitable, that recognizes the migration between and among provinces and so on. That's a debate that we cannot get into as officials. We are just relying on official statistics. But that's where we are, Chairperson. Chairperson, having said all these things that we have said, and I must just throw the attention of the committee to what we've included in your packs. A couple of times the issues have been raised to say, does the NDA actually have functional projects on the ground? Does the NDA have any functional projects on the ground? The answer is yes. The projects are not at different levels of implementation, but yes, we have functional projects on the ground. And Chairperson, our portfolio of evidence is the newsletters that we've included in your pack, which show you the kind of NGO projects that we have on the ground. You will recall last time when I reported, I think it is in the committee, I spoke about a project called Newport in Pietermaritzburg, and I said this project has the potential to compete with Food and Veg. Now, that project is up and running now. And if you happen to be in Pietermaritzburg, go to that project and see what is it that is happening on the ground there. The profile of the project is covered in one of the newsletters, and you can see from the cover that this is not an NGO-type initiative. We are not talking survivalistic stuff. We are talking serious business. And a whole range of other projects are listed in there. But the fact that we have very successful projects that have graduated from being projects to community enterprises and businesses does not mean that we don't have problems with regard to projects. And I will just allude to a number of the challenges that we have. The first one, Chairperson, is the limited financial resources. And I indicated, Chairperson, that we have 78 million allocated for projects in 11-12, but 78 million given the magnitude of poverty, not in the country as a whole, but just in those wards that we've spoken about. The resources that we have do not begin to match the demand out there. And the demand is not only for projects and programs. We are talking community development as a whole, because I think for the NDA, it's not only eradicating poverty through projects and programs. It's also about mobilizing communities to leverage opportunities from other places. The second one is a problem that we've painfully confronted internally as an organization, and that has to do with inadequate skills and competencies of some of our staff. This is something that we have observed, that we are working on, and it has to do with the area around financial management skills. And these are the interventions that we have put in place, that we, from time to time, there is a need to reinforce the area of financial management skills. Some of the projects that collapse at the NDA, that are funded by the NDA, have to do with conflict in those projects. As soon as money comes in, people start fighting. And we understand that conflict is part of project cycle, especially in a development context. And this is the area that we are reinforcing, the area of alternative dispute resolution. We understand that we need to upscale our monitoring more than we have ever done in the past. And it's not so much the number of visits that we undertake to project, it's the quality of monitoring that is aimed at providing support to this particular project. This is the area where we are putting emphasis. So we don't want to come to the committee and say, the committee has previously expressed a concern about monitoring. We are now doing it four times. Of course, we may be doing four times, but the emphasis is, what is the quality of that monitoring support that is offered to this funded project, rather than the numbers themselves? And of course, we are going to strengthen the recruitment and the selection process around people who monitor these projects and deploy people to the right position. In the projects themselves, this is what we have identified. Limited management, institutional and technical capacity, which is something we must expect because we are dealing with community groups that have not had previous support in most instances from other people. And what we need to do is to, at the level of approval assessment, be sure about the capacity of whoever we are funding, particularly around the areas of financial management, governance, and conflict resolution, having said what we said about conflicts in these organizations. It's not only sufficient, Chairperson, to talk about funding projects. We must link our projects with markets. If you've worked in this area, Chairperson, one of the observations is the fact that we have good projects out there in communities, but they don't have anybody to sell to. Or if they are able to access established markets, let's say Johannesburg Fresh Produce Market or Pretoria Fresh Produce Market, the barrier to entry for them to get there and sell is quite immense. what this process goes through is amazing. They wake up at 4 o'clock, load the truck at 4:30, and they're already at the market at 5 o'clock. They're put in the queue for quite a long time, and in some instances have to go back with their produce. Or if they have to sell, already people have taken the cream in the morning. So people have left. So what we have tried to do is to make sure that we open up channels with the market, but we have also learned recently that there are agents, that these markets have agents who operate on commission. So when you go to the Pretoria Fresh Produce Market, you go to your agent is able to process your thing. You have to play the game if you are in that market. But this is not something that we should condone as a country. We must try and level the playing field and lower the barriers to entry. We are also going to foster relationships with local government. As I said, most of the projects are linked with local government, particularly around either co-funding or access to land, and that we must continue to get non-financial support from other stakeholders. I've already spoken about the issue of monitoring. I said the issue is not so much the frequency at the moment. The issue is the quality of the monitoring. And I've already indicated that we will source professional volunteers to assist us, including universities, in some instances. Chairperson, we would like to conclude at this level and thank the committee for the opportunity and the honourable members for listening. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Makhano. Yeah, at this stage, I will allow members to interact with the presentation. And in your presentation, you have mentioned the important pronouncements by the President, the job creation, eradicate poverty, cooperative establishment. But on the job creation, what I would like you to try to explain, how many jobs do you intend creating, whether they are temporary or permanent jobs, in response to the President's pronouncement? Yes. Honorable Buroto, and this will go down like that. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I welcome the presentation by NGA today. And I must say that coming from the, as we end this Women's Month, having heard our Women's Parliament last week, this presentation really came at the right time. In that, being aware yourself, the main problem that we have, or that the issue that was raised by the women of this country, is access to information. That is the main thing. Now, being here, not wanting to get more, as a person who represents provinces, as a person who represents those constituencies that are in rural areas, and wanting to extend the Women's Parliament's wishes to the women out there at home, not only women, but every emerging, you know, business people or social, as you said, the society, civil society organizations that needs help out there. I don't know if I can be assisted by this body here to make sure that what you told us today about the work of the NAG reaches those people down there. If I can be assisted to know where to go. For instance, I'm coming from Mpumalanga. If I'm coming from Mpumalanga, this is the local government, local municipality, Mkonto, Tembisile, Muroka, or so on. If I'm in those areas, where can I go to get people? Maybe I can be able to organize those people, bring them together so that they get the information they want, be educated on what they want to do to alleviate poverty, as this NDA is a tool for poverty alleviation. How do I do that? Where do I go to? I may not expect that now you have the answer to say in such a municipality, this is what you can do. But that is actually what I would like to have, so that we are reaching those people down there who don't have this information. That is the first thing that I just want to bring in. When you explained the areas, you explained the ECD one so well, and when you came to rural development, you said when we talk rural development, we don't talk agriculture. I wish you would have, you know, given us a hint of what is the understanding of that rural development, because some of us may say it's agriculture and so on. And so far, I think the last time we talked about your relationship with local government, in that is exactly what we want in our local government, to be able to take up what you are offering as a national body. Are there any means that have been done to make sure that there is that link, communication between you and the local government? The documentation. For instance, if I have to organize the women or the emerging business people or emerging farmers or those ECD practitioners, how do I access the documentation that is can even use their own languages, since we come from the areas that people use languages and illiteracy is still very high. The last one, Honorable Chair, is the market. It is true. When people are funded, they will have those things. I come from an area where women are very good with beads, for instance. They do them, but they don't have the market. How can we be assisted to assist them? Thank you very much.
Honorable Nova, I would like to beg with you that if you can try and go straight to the questions, so that we allow everybody to ask all the questions they want to ask members, we will be, all of us will be satisfied with the responses. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe taking from your presentation, your mission, your vision is a society free from poverty. And the purpose to improve the quality of life of the poor, to foster self-reliance. And you have cross-cutting issues, youth development, and women, that's one too, to take those two. To say, when you follow the nodal areas route, from 1994, I think, to 99 or so, there was this inching of nodal areas. And every project goes to nodal areas. But I'm from Gauteng. The situation in Alex, which was identified as one of the northern areas, has never improved. And everybody has given the money to say, no, we're funding Alex, we're funding whatever. So I want you to elaborate, to say why the root of the northern areas, because maybe in the northern areas already there are departments that are funding there. Why flood one area instead of opening up with others? Because as you fly at the end, you don't see any development. So other than the ones that you are given by provinces like Kalinan, you may have, for instance, my constituency is in Cape Town. That place, everybody knows, it is not developing. And if you can compare, if you have been both in both places, Cape Town is Western Kalinan. Sounds like Kalinan is at the outskirts of Gauteng. But people who need this thing more are the people that for instance, one example is Cape Town. So one then wants to know, in your presentation, you talk about you capacitate, not even capacitate, you respond to the well-established. That's your page 9, slide 17. Orally, you say you help the those that are emerging, but what you have written is different in terms of that this acronym, RURAR, whatever, is targeting well-established. And it means, if you are targeting the well-established, as you said it in your own mouth, Patricia is not written here, you only are supporting the haves and not those that need it most, which may then not move in line with your mission and vision. The other one, I'm sorry, that I'm going to go back to your funding criteria. You might be confusing me when you talk of the population index. I may not understand this big English. In the one that you said you're not going to argue, if I'm simplifying what I want to raise, is that what I knew last year is that Gauteng was at 10.5 million in terms of the population. Whether it's population index or whatever it is, I don't know. And moving from giving, moving away from giving Gauteng and Western Cape less because of the notion that they are urban and have money. But now the Treasury talks about equitable share funding formula. Now, when you come up with 10.550% and Eastern Cape 20 point whatever, I want you to explain what is this thing. Because I can argue that now, how big is 11 million now, point something, even before the census. And then in terms of how you allocate funding, how do you allocate funding? For instance, I see Bumalang, number of projects. I see Eastern Cape is 24, ne? Approving 29. Limpopo 24, 39, 31. Okay. Do you give according to the number of the projects or according to how is the project intending to achieve? What is your basis? What is your basis or your criteria of awarding the project? And on the evidence, you might be telling us that from here we can see that these projects are alive. But maybe as we do the oversight, we can then verify whether what is in picture is in line with what is happening. For instance, we were in Limpopo just, in August or July. We were in our program, and even on the day of oversight, we were going to see the bridge. And the bridge that is not there. They were not saying it's being built. They were saying the bridge is there. Maybe because we did not even see the pictures. The pictures that might be somewhere else. But when we arrived at the site, there was no bridge. So we would want to know, as you tell us just broadly, that we have Kalina. Where in Kalina? Where in Western Cape? So that as we plan our oversight, we are zooming in at the specific areas. You talk of the institutional linkages with expert organizations for skills transfer. I want to make an example again. With the same visit in Limpopo, there is a dairy project that we visited. Not even the first time. Last year, in March, we visited the same project. And then findings and recommendations. We went back to the same project. this aspect that was helping that project had pulled out, and as that aspect is pulled out, the evidence of skills transfer is not there. We were there, we saw it, those people are struggling. There's no water, but it's a dairy project, there's no water for the farmers to wash their hands as they're milking. The machines are just outside, where the cattle are grazing, there even you can see that there's no life, even with the cattle, and we're told, no, there's a disease that is, but you see, you can't even market link. Then last year they raised the question of they want to be linked with the with industry, okay. And no person.
Honorable members, please.
Okay.
Yeah, other members.
Yeah, we need to say where are the places?
Yeah, because I think some of the projects are not directly falling under your own jurisdiction. As I'm listening
now
to this, yeah. Okay, Honorable Ranto.
Thanks, Chairperson. You know,
it's the easiest thing.
As I'm listening to the presenters and the questions that the members have put in place, I think I'll be repeating them, except one question that I have of strengthening the ECD sites and management. I don't know. Maybe I did not listen well. Sometimes the listening skills, they flash away as you are listening. Have you started already, or are you still planning to start the strengthening of the ECD side? And when you talk on N2F level 4, I think this N2 level 4 refers to the educators of the ECD side. They after getting the N2F level 4, they will be expecting their salaries to be equivalent to their qualifications. Is the Department of Education aware of that, or are you going to pay the salaries as the NPA? Because what I know, the Department of Education usually, to us as educators, when we improve our qualifications, Department of Education gives you just a lump sum of 3,000 and saying thank you that you have done this, you've improved your qualifications. Otherwise, the salary remains the same as it is. I'm not sure about your negotiations or your interaction with the Department of Education here. And also, are you going to strengthen the ECD sites by doing workshops, and how long will your workshops take? Are they going to take a week, 2 weeks, or a month to be workshops? Because I think of the areas where I'm coming from Johnsonville originally, and the ECD sites that are there, they are being, the people who work there, they don't even have a standard 10. They just improve them. So I'm thinking of your communication with them. Is it going to be effective? You said your programs go down to the people. I just want to know. I know you might monitor them effectively, and your the people who are monitoring those projects, are those projects effectively talking to the to your strategic objectives? And I'm not sure, but one of you have talked about women, because I would like to know how much is allocated for women in your budget. Because the women were here last week, and they said the allocation that is given to them is always so little that they can't do anything. And also, as you have talked about conflict that is amongst these projects, that makes this project to collapse. It's because of
mismanagement of money or money, do you have a program of educating these people on financial management? Because if you they can have you can have a quality of monitoring, a system of monitoring that is very good. But if these people don't have financial management skills, it's a futile exercise that you are doing. I think those are my few questions. And also, we always say, as we are here in the National Council of Provinces, we are representing provinces. When you say the five nodal points are in some in Mpumalanga and some areas, and I mean Eastern Cape, you said Eastern Cape, but you were not specific where in Eastern Cape. We do oversight as the NCOP. We've got provincial week that we go and see if these things are happening down there. Are the people doing their job? Then if you just say in Eastern Cape, I will go around Eastern Cape from Humansdorp to Tofinvaba and from Tofinvaba to Alwa North, and I won't see them, this project, if I don't know the specific places.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to be long. I'm just going to be straight to the point. I just want to talk to the issue of challenges. Last time when the presentation was made here, these were the challenges which were identified: inadequate skills, projects which are not sustainable, inadequate monitoring. I appreciate that there's an intervention plan, but one would expect that because these are the challenges which were presented by them, that at least we should be getting a progress report now. That because we've identified shortage of skills within our staff, this is how far we are. Really, maybe the presenter was somehow economical about the information, but this is what one really needs to understand. What is the progress? Because the challenges were still the same. This is what we got last time. And my last question would be around this project. It's just that my memory is not sometimes that I know there was a number of the projects which were closing down. Today you are talking about 70. Can one maybe get clarity? What are the reasons? Because maybe when you present the reasons, one will be in a position to recall what were the reasons that led to those others that closed down the last time when you made your presentation, I think.
Next member?
Chair, though a bit covered by some of the questions, I just want to think to put only these two. I've listened attentively to the presentation, but what I want you to do, maybe to assist me, is to maybe you should scan project by project, and maybe if possible province by province, so that you are able to update the committee about the outstanding project in different provinces. And more so, you must also indicate which ones are problematic and those that need intervention, maybe province by province, so that we are able to understand correctly the progress that we're making from all the projects that we have in different provinces. That is the one question that I wanted to raise. The other one, Chair, is on Honorable Mahati have just covered that one well, which have actually made me very worried. That if you have indicated previously that you have a problem with finances, I just want to take it further and check with your good self. What is your strategic mechanism that you use to, you know, to mobilize additional, you know, financial resources or resources to make sure that you are able to, you know, deal with your challenges. And I just wanted to check if you only dependent on the grants that you're getting, or you have another method that you use to make sure that you are self-sustained. Those are the two questions that I wanted to raise in addition to other questions. Thank you.
Any other member? Yes, Honorable Devin.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On slide number 8, there is mentioned about the influence on policies. And I'm very much interested in which policies and which departments are you referring to the which you try to influence the policy. Can you just give more information about that one? And then on the second one, the strengthening of the ECD practitioners. Are you actually supporting the practitioners in the training so that they can go to the next level, or are there other methods which you use in supporting them? Because I think this is very much important so that we can get a better ECD learner there. And then on the funding of the informal settlements, especially in the urban cities. Are you also busy there to help those people in projects, and which cities, urban cities, are you actually involved in? And then on the self-reliance of the people, I just want to ask you can you just give us some information in which areas and projects we already have people outside the project now carrying on with their own work or projects and plans without the assistance or funding from the NDA. I also like you to give us a time frame of the 9 nodal areas. Are there or is there a time frame for them so that they can actually on some time be excluded from supporting from the NDA, so that we can include other nodal points or areas so that they can benefit from the funds? Number Chairperson, then the other question is straightforward. The name of the project on slide number 20. Maybe NDA can just give the committee the names of those. Slide 20. All right. And then the other one, then on slide number 23, inadequate skills and competencies of NDA staff. Can we just get some more information in which areas are you referring to? And then on slide number 25, establishing a network of professional volunteers to provide specialist support, from which part of the community are you actually getting or try to get the volunteers in assisting the NDA and also the different projects? And what support to those who have shortcomings, that is the second one, evaluation and impact assessment of all funded projects, midterm and the end term. Thank you, Honorable Chairman.
Thanks, Honorable Tivillas. Just a few questions from my side. You mentioned projects that have graduated from being projects to community enterprises. Which provinces have got such enterprises, and how many are they? Yeah, statistics or some kind, if you can give us brief information in on that regard. Last year we visited Western Cape funded, NDA funded projects. There were some challenges and we promised that some of those challenges will be addressed by the NDA. For instance, issue of infrastructure, issue of funding on some of them, and many other issues. Can you please give us a brief report on that issue? Another question is on okay, the presentation on the project formulation, project appraisal and all that, that slide, slide number, I don't see the numbers now. Yes. Which provinces are prioritized for this new way of doing things in terms of project identification and that whole program? And when has it started? The ECD program, when you listen to education, it talks of ECD program. When you talk to social development, it talks of ECD, health, ECD, everybody ECD. Is there any alignment and integration of your activities or responsibilities or so that there's no duplication and you find that others are falling into cracks? Yeah, that would be, yeah, the budget cut, why was the budget cut? And how are you going to fund the new projects that you have identified? That's the last one. Okay. Oh, Honorable Mashamid.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I will just put it straight in terms of the allocation of projects, a program, I think that talk to it. If we can be, you know, provided with that information. But then, you are saying you are assisting poor communities to eradicate poverty. But your criteria, and in most cases, we find poor communities in the rural areas of our country. And then you are saying you support programs which are integrated, holistic, comprehensive, and sustainable. Now, it brings to my mind as to whether in our rural areas, can we find, I don't know, maybe you, if a CBO, they make an application for the funding, you also need a comprehensive business plan which will ensure that project is integrated, it is holistic, and it is sustainable. I just want to get it clear. Do you look at the business plan or at the application, or do you look at the area for as it is? I just want to, before you release funds, what makes you to release funds to those groups? Thanks, Chairman.
Thank you. Over to Mr. Mahan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We will deal with the questions and we'll try with and move with speed. I'm just going to start at the bottom. I'll deal with some of the questions and then Mr. Mokano will address those the other questions. First of all, I just want to touch on the last but one question that is talking to holistic, integrated, and so forth, to indicate, and I just want to also link that with the question that was raised earlier on around the fact that why do we target nodal areas are we not pumping money to the same areas and leaving out other areas? Just to indicate that, first of all, as indicated in our presentation in terms of our vision and our mission, the NDA was created in terms of responding to poverty by focusing specifically on civil society organizations. So mandate is clear, is in terms of addressing poverty in the poor communities, but targeting specifically civil society organizations. And as we do that, we are guided by government policies and strategies. And I just want to mention that you will recall, honorable members, that there is an anti-poverty strategy that has been developed for the country that outlines areas that are critical to address when addressing the issues of poverty. And therefore, as an agency that was created to address issues of poverty, when we address poverty, we also refer to that strategy to pick up at those critical areas and those critical pillars that we need to address in poverty. And secondly, recently there is a comprehensive rural strategy that has been developed. And even when you look at that comprehensive rural strategy, it also outlines the pillars that need to be addressed when you address issues of rural development. And as we take the theme that deals with rural development, we touch on those areas that we look at. That is why, for example, we would take the issue, if you look at the rural strategy, you would pick up that one of the challenges in the rural areas is the issue of education, particularly the access of children in terms of early childhood development. If you look at the percentage in terms of access, you will realize that in the urban areas, children in the urban areas are accessing early childhood development. But when it comes to rural areas, the access is very low. And therefore, that begins to say, if we are focusing on rural development, one of the areas that we would look at is to ensure that children from the rural areas do access early childhood development. And as we do that, I'm going to be clubbing some of the questions. As we do that, especially let me zoom into early childhood development because there are quite a number of questions around that. Again, when we look at early childhood development, there is an early childhood development strategy for the country that begins to say, when you look at early childhood development in the country, there are critical departments that have to take specific roles in addressing those areas that relate to early childhood development. For example, the first area is the area around the stimulation of children, and that relates to the fact that in an early childhood development education, there needs to be practitioners that have got a specific role in terms of stimulating children. Children do not have just to go there and play and sleep, but they need to be stimulated cognitively and so forth. And therefore, the role of practitioners becomes very critical. And therefore, if you want to do that, it means these practitioners cannot just be ordinary people without skills. They need to be trained. And hence, it was agreed that education is going to take the role of training the practitioners. And these practitioners are going to be at, the strategy even indicates that they are going to be at different levels. N2F level 4, N2F level, and so forth. So that was agreed. So that's the role of the Department of Education. And then the second role, it's the role of the Department of Social Development. And I'm sure the honorable members, you are aware that in terms of the Department of Social Development, actually the Department of Social Development even
develop the norms and standards of the early childhood development, because and that emanates from the Children's Act, which begins to say that when you have children in a specific area, you need to ensure that the environment within which those children are kept is healthy, is safe, and so forth. And therefore, it prescribes the norms and standards in terms of how the environment, the area, if you are putting children in a crèche or an early childhood development, you can't put children in the building that is almost falling apart and whatever, and therefore prescribes the norms and standards. And that's why it even goes further to say, the social development says, early childhood development centers will be registered, and the registration will be based on the ability to meet the norms and standards. And I just want to come back to where we sit in as NGA, because what we have come out, and I'm going back now to the area where I said that in the rural areas, you find challenges where children are not accessing ECD. And some of those challenges is the fact that you would start with the environment itself, where the building is like it's falling apart. And therefore, they don't get to a stage where they are registered because they do not meet the standards. And we have examples in different rural areas where we have come in as NGA and assisted those in infrastructure. Hence, the presentation was that in other areas, we would come in as part of the infrastructure to build the ECD, so that they can be, those children can be kept in a healthy area and safe environment. There are areas, Mr. Mukhano can give you examples in terms of specific areas where we have assisted in building the infrastructure. But in other areas, you find that education does not, how should I say, I don't want to say they don't have capacity, but you find that it takes longer for education to train the practitioners, and you find that they would have to wait longer periods. And again, where there are those challenges where it takes longer for the Department of Education to train practitioners, we come in as NGA, where we assist to accelerate the process by ensuring that we get accredited trainers that can assist those practitioners in terms of training linked to the curriculum that is there. In terms of, I've already indicated how we work with other sites in terms of helping them to meet the norms and standards set by the Department of Social Development, because we're working closely with the Department of Social Development. But in other instances, the early childhood development centers have to have management. And you find that because they are funded, they are run, by the way, ECDs in this country are run by NGOs. They are run by civil society organizations. Being run by civil society organizations, they are funded by including government and other funders. But you find that there are challenges in managing these ECD centers, to the extent that you find that they don't have the management capacity, they cannot manage the funds that they are getting from, you know, various funders, and therefore we come in, because part of our mandate as NGA, it says we need to build and strengthen the capacity of civil society organizations. Therefore, we come in terms of strengthening the institutional capacity of these civil society organizations that are managing ECDs. Actually, we are even working, especially when it comes to ECD, we are working very closely with the network. There is a network of early childhood development organization, and part of that network, ECD centers of the organization would be, registered as part of that network. And the role of the network is to ensure that the capacity of various ECD centers is strengthened. So we work with the network that also builds the capacity. And we've seen in the past years that approach works very well, because you are working with a network that addresses the capacity of the early childhood development centers. Again, the role of health, it cannot be, you know, the health has got a specific role in terms of ECDs. Because those children that are there, they need to be healthy and that, and how do we link. And therefore, what I'm trying to emphasize on is that the early childhood development plan for the country outlines various responsibilities and roles. And it's important that there needs to be an integrated approach in ensuring that the early childhood development in this country is at an level that it's supposed to be, looking at those areas that I've just outlined. And this is where we come in to assist as NDA. And particularly because when we were presenting, you saw that there was, even when you look at there's an objective that says we build partnerships, because we recognize that as NDA, there's no way that we can address issues of poverty if we're going to be operating in silo. We need to be working in an integrated fashion with other departments, with other development partners, with other stakeholders, so that we can be able to have a much better impact in terms of what we do. So I hope I've addressed the issues, various questions that were coming from ECD, specifically around the focus areas, around the strengthening of ECD. There was even a question to say, how long does it take? In terms of how long, it depends on what capacity are we building. If, for example, it's the management capacity and training around to assist in financial management, it will depend on that particular program. But if it's the training around N2F level as practitioners, that has got its, a time frame. The question on the budget cut. The question on budget cut. The last year and the other year, you will recall, honorable members, that there was a challenge of economic meltdown in the country, and yes, the recession and as such, a number of departments, their budgets were cut because of a number. I mean, if you recall, there's a country borrow more money and so forth. And it was at that time that even our budget was cut, and actually it was cut tremendously in that year. But we can say, fortunately, now in this year, that amount has been brought back in terms of that. So that was the cut was based on that. And I mean, it was very difficult for us because we are saying that the amount that is allocated to us, I mean, if you look at the amount, which is 161 million rand, I mean, that amount is just a drop in the ocean if you look at the challenges of poverty. It doesn't begin to even address a number of issues. Hence, it becomes important for us to prioritize that with the limited resources that we have, who are the partners that we are going to work with, what are the priorities that we are going to look, what are the priority areas, honorable member, that we are going to look at. And therefore, we would begin to say that we will prioritize those areas that are the poorest. And we cannot go to those areas where we cannot go, for example, if it's ECD, you cannot target communities where children are already going to ECD, accessing ECD, but you will target those areas where in that village or in that community, there's no ECD at all. So you will target the poorest of the poor areas, and you will target those areas that, you know, there is no access at all. This is how we prioritize our our programs. On the question of the challenges that we indicated, and the fact that these challenges are still the same, we acknowledge the fact that we should have said this is the progress that we have made, because indeed we have made tremendous progress in terms of this. But I must just indicate, honorable members, that
when we outline the challenges, we will continue to indicate these challenges. Because for us, we will always have a challenge around the fact that we've got limited resources, given the magnitude of poverty. So that challenge will always stay. But what we have done, for example, this year, in our strategy this year, as I think we had an opportunity of presenting it to you, you would see that part of our strategy is that in the MTF, in the next 5 years, we have put a target of, and we can argue to say that it's a very ambitious target. We have put a target of raising 1 billion rand over a period of 5 years, in addition to what we are getting from government. And if you break that down, it means per year we are expected to raise 200 million rand. It's a very ambitious target, and I'm saying very ambitious because we all know that because of economic, a meltdown, even the funders, even the donors outside this country, they have reduced, donor funding. So it becomes quite difficult, but we are moving on. We've already signed some agreements with some people that are, some organizations that are prepared to fund us. But resource mobilization, we have developed a strategy and we have put the target, as I say, over a period of 5 years to say we would want to raise 1 billion rand. On the issue of, I was talking about the challenges, that we will always have the same challenges, because if you look at the nature of work that we do, we fund civil society organizations to undertake programs and projects in the communities. The projects that we fund, we would always come across a challenge of the capacity of those civil society organizations. And that begins to say we need to ensure that from inside as an organization, we have very good skills that would assist in terms of supporting these organizations and projects, but also monitoring the work that is done. And therefore, the issue of monitoring for us is a very important issue, that we need to ensure that we've got very good skills, and we have improved quite a lot. Last year, we appeared before SCOPA, I'm sure you would recall, honorable members, where part of those issues was the issues that some of the projects were dying, if I can call it that way, and so forth, and the issue of monitoring was a problem. And we have moved because we can report now to the committee to say that we have strengthened our monitoring, and we are working very closely to ensure that those projects that really need to be held by hand and supported, we are assisting them, and we are yielding good results. On the establishing a network of professional volunteers to provide specialist support to NDA-funded projects as an intervention plan, we also felt that it's important for us that the support that we provide to these organizations, it's not only the support that comes from us as NDA, but how do we link, if for example we've got projects that are agricultural projects that are addressing the issues of food security, how do we build partnership with the Department of Agriculture so that we can get mentors, so that we can get specialists that can assist us and provide assistance in terms of those projects that relate to agriculture. For example, we have a project in Northern Cape that is the hydroponics project. And in terms of that project, we got a mentor, which was a person from the University of Stellenbosch, that assisted that particular project in terms of assisting them in a number of ways in terms of growing vegetables using hydroponics and that. But also the Department of Agriculture offered a person that was going to assist that. So it depends on the type of project where we can build partnership and source experts to assist and mentor those particular projects. So that is how we are dealing with that part in terms of establishing networks to address those projects. We can provide, we acknowledge the request that says we need to provide the list of projects to say exactly in Eastern Cape where are these projects and what are they. Fortunately, we do have a list like that. We will just, Honorable Chair, send it to you, because that list, what it does, it says in a province, for example, in Eastern Cape, the projects are located in this district, in this municipality, and the project is in relation to this. So, and I think it will assist the honorable members in terms of, you know, looking at those projects. So if we can, would request to forward that list, that will give the breakdown, and I think it will assist the projects. I've dealt with how are we supporting ECGs, I've dealt with that. The question on which policies do we influence, I've indicated earlier on that the projects that we deal with, those projects we are dealing with, it relates to the mandate in terms of addressing the issues of poverty and development. And therefore, the experience that we get from the projects that we fund in the communities, we've got a unit that is dealing with research, that is dealing, and part of that, as part of evaluating the impact of those projects. We get information that reflects on best practices, that reflects on how we can influence policies that address issues of poverty. For example, we have learned, there are issues that we have learned around the issues of ECD, for example, that we have made input to the Department of Social Development to say these are the experiences that we have come across, these are the areas that you need to look at in terms of changing the policy, because these are the challenges that are there, or these are the positive spins around this particular area. So this is how we influence policy on a number of areas. Even when the anti-poverty strategy of the country was developed, we used our experience and our research in terms of making inputs in terms of that particular strategy of the country. So this is how we work. Through our experience, through our research unit, we contribute, especially to those departments that are developing policy that influence the number of areas that relate to poverty.
Mind your time.
Oh, okay. Breakdown of projects of debt is that capacity building. I've already indicated that we build capacity on a number of areas: governance, management, financial, conflict resolution. It depends what is the need of a particular project, and then we will provide capacity as it relates to that. Around how much is located to women in our budget, we don't have the breakdown, but I can safely indicate that over 80% actually of our budget, our projects, over 80% goes to women, because most of the projects that we fund constitute a bigger percentage of women. That's one area that we are happy with, because we are, you know, it's addressing those issues. Let me just pause and give Mr. Mukhano an opportunity to address those questions that I've left out.
Thank you. Mr. Mukhano, you've got 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. yes. Chairperson, we will provide a report to the committee on the progress on issues raised with the Western Cape Oversight Committee. Mm-hmm. When it comes to ECD, a question was raised, are you going to start or have you started? We have started. We have already built ECD structures in some localities in the country, and we've already started the process of training ECD practitioners. In fact, in the Northern Cape, an organization called Castora Trust is assisting us with training of ECD practitioners, and those who are interested in the so we started last year. So that process is way ahead.
The issue of access to information, at the back of each of the newsletters that we have, there is a contact list of all our provinces. But if you would like us to facilitate the meeting with the respective provinces, that we can do. And if the committee members would like to invite us to come and address communities where information should be shared, we would be willing to do that. Finally, the model for accessing funds. I think we... Oh, sorry.
Chairperson, my 3 minutes is up.
two more minutes allocated.
Thank you, Chair. On the question of the RFP and program formulation, I think we tried to articulate the fact that there are two approaches to accessing funding. The first one is program formulation. The second one is request for proposal. I said the program formulation component is earmarked, is intended for localities where there is relative absence of DSOs, where communities are weak, where we have to assist them to be able to package proposals that can be funded. That is the first part. The second part I said was RFP, which I didn't articulate in so many terms. But the request for proposals, which is about inviting people to apply for funding on a competitive basis. This favors more well-established organizations because those that are able to write sophisticated proposals will be those that will be able to access the funding. And I said, is this what we want to see? And the answer is no. So this is where we stand with the two approaches. So moving forward, Chairperson, you asked the question, where are we in terms of those two approaches? We favor program formulation because we believe it enables us to achieve more of what we want to achieve. In this financial year, 90% of our funding will be committed through the program formulation route. The 10% will be through the request for proposals. That's all.
Did you respond to the community enterprises?
Oh, the community enterprises that have graduated from being project group. When I started, I spoke about Newport. Newport started last year. We approved funding last year. They started implementing funding the structure, but effectively they started operating in February this year. In 3 months, Newport was able to generate a revenue of over R1 million. A net profit of 352,000 in 3 months. Newport in Pietermaritzburg. In Limpopo, there is a project called Sasekisani. Sasekisani is a poultry project. Sasekisani is able to generate over 150,000 per month at the moment. And there are a couple others. The idea is that the NDA enters at a level where the IDC and NEF could not enter, provide a base. And when those organizations start to take up, then the IDC and NEF can take over. That's the idea, because we would not be able to put 10 million on the table for this. 10 million is more than the budget of Gauteng or Western Cape. So we won't be able to do that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. If we have exhausted all the questions, can we move to the... No follow-up members, please. Yeah, which one is it? Okay. Yeah, if you can just identify questions that were not responded to, but no follow-up.
No follow-up.
Yes.
Let me answer that one, Chairperson.
I said 325 projects, 255. 70 are in the process of being closed down, not collapsing. We are closing them down because our projects are approved over a period of 12 months to 36 months. So when the 24 months or 36 months are up, we have to close them properly because they are time bound. It doesn't mean that they stop to exist. It simply means that our contract with them has come to an end. We've paid them all that they were supposed to be paid. So the 70, the difference between the 70, the 255 and the 70 is that we've already paid them their last tranches. We are in the process of doing what I've just said. And in terms of jobs, job creation, Chair, you asked the numbers because we are in the era of job creation. We don't have specific figures at the moment. We can avail those figures. There are baseline figures that we put in our state plan, which we will avail to you. What we know is that last year we created 2,700 jobs, and this year we are in the process of collating evidence because it has to be verified. We have to give you portfolio of evidence to say this is the person whose job we have created. Thank you, Chair.
No, I won't allow any comments. Honourable de Villiers, is that a reminder on a question?
Outstanding question.
Outstanding question.
Yeah, answer on a question. Maybe I was asleep, but the information about the shortcomings of the NDA staff, that one I didn't catch up.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The inadequate skills of staff. I indicated that we support projects. We have what we call development managers. And the role of development managers is to facilitate, support, monitor the implementation of projects in communities. And what we, I indicated earlier on that, what we experienced previously was that some of the projects would collapse because we were not effective as an organization in monitoring and supporting those organizations. Hence, what we did as an organization, we had to provide training to our development managers so that they are able to support the implementation of programs, so that they are able to monitor the implementation. So we have strengthened the internal skills of those, particularly as it relates to the support they provide in the implementation of projects. I think that...
Okay. Then let me allow Honorable Ranto, she has a suggestion briefly before we close on this matter.
Chairperson, I would suggest that the NDA should also look at the subsistence farming, because not all farming is commercial, and people should know and understand how to do subsistence farming in their areas.
Thanks very much, member. And can we get the presentation on appeals tribunal?
Are you allowing
them
to go?
Yeah, too. Are you
Maya? Look. No,
just
stand up. It's fine.
Okay, because it will be eating on your time. Maybe you want to fly, but it's going to be empty here. That's right.
No problem.
Okay. All right.
And give moral support to your colleagues.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Time now. I'm going to give you 20 minutes, and each member who wants to comment, ask questions, I'm giving you two questions. Only if there are only a few members who have asked questions, that I can consider increasing it to a bigger number. Yeah. 20 minutes, that is. Over to you.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Chairperson. I will proceed with the presentation from Matis Rabina. My name is John Mokwele, director from the Appeals Unit. I think as has been mentioned earlier during the opening that our DG and the acting program manager are attending a different meeting with heads of social development in Johannesburg. But I'm going to present the report as tabled so that the members could be appraised of what has happened since the beginning of this year. Our report will give the background and also talks to the issue of the Ntamo judgment in the Eastern Cape, which then will is the reason for the progress report from April until July 31st in terms of backlog appeals and the new matters, and talk to challenges and recommendations. In terms of background, is that by the 1st of April last year, we had a backlog of 60,561, which we're supposed to adjudicate. And by March this year, we managed to adjudicate 41,162 backlog appeals. And we're left with about 19,399 appeals to be adjudicated by the end of this financial year, which, as a result of the Ntamo, we have to bring forward the completion date to October. I'll explain what happened. What happened is that in the beginning of this year, the Legal Resource Center with the Black Slash in the Eastern Cape took the minister to court to say that the delay in finalizing the appeals backlog is unconstitutional and that the minister should be ordered to finalize the backlog appeals by the end of September, because this backlog has been going on for a number of years and they want finality on those matters. And as a result of that application to court, an out-of-court settlement was reached whereby the department agreed with the application, the applicant, that they will finalize the backlog by the end of September with a report presented by the end of October, and that secondly will also submit plans and strategies that will reflect, will show to court that we will be able to achieve the plans in terms of the target, and that all new appeals will be finalized within 90 days, and if we are not able to do that in 90 days, that particular appeal will be considered backlog, so which means that will add the numbers of backlog that we have, which number I said at the beginning, that is 19,399. And further that, we have to table a report to the court by the 30th of October that says, we'll tell the court, say, we have managed the backlog, we have dealt with all the appeals in the backlog. So having done so, we then looked back and sit back as an organization and said, how are you going to do that? We then looked at our plan and said, this is how we're going to do it in the next two quarters in terms of our financial year, which means from April to September. This is how we're going to be doing. The first quarter, April, May, June, we'll deal with 9,000. And then the second quarter, we'll deal with another 9,000, which will be the total of 19,399. This is about the backlog appeals. So what happened that we then started in terms of assessing, because most of these things were appeals which we have not yet considered. We started looking to them, checking what are the status of those appeals. We discovered that there were a number of appeals which we have been received without ID numbers,
which is that appellants just submitted application to say, I want to appeal for not having received the grant, but that person is just debiting course without an ID number. So what we did is that we have sent letters to those appellants to say, can you provide us ID number so that we are able to confirm if indeed it's an appeal or an inquiry, whatever the case may be. Again, we discovered that there were other appeals which are means tests. Means tests are those appeals that were applications which were rejected as a result of people having sufficient means. We know that our grants are means tested, in that people are checked whether they have sufficient means to provide for themselves. If they don't have, then they'll be getting the grant. So there were two categories in terms of the act. The previous act is that all beneficiaries were supposed to refer back to SASSA, because the appeal tribunal established its role was to deal with appeals for applicants for grants, not beneficiaries. People were in the system already in terms of grants, were receiving their grants, and they were then reduced as a result of improvement of their means. So what happened is that the new Amendment Act, which was issued in the 16th of September last year, provided that now all applicants and beneficiaries can then appeal to the appeal tribunal for their matters to be considered. But then we then referred those which were not supposed to be considered by the tribunal as the citizens and back to SASSA for consideration. The third category that we have also noted is that there were just duplicate of appeal that we have done, because what happened that if people are not getting any response, they do appeal again. So we find that we have four appeals of one person. So these are the kind of duplicate that we talked about. And then also there were matters which were inquiries and general complaints, which we referred to customer care offices for both SASSA and our department. So the last category is where we refer to as real backlog, because these are matters that we have to consider as the appeal tribunal, because we have all the required documents and that we have to then also approach SASSA to provide us with sufficient information for us to proceed. So these are what we have done so far. In terms of the category that I spoke to in the earlier slide, is that by end of July, we have adjudicated 5,226 appeals, which then give us a balance of 14,716. And of that, these are the categories that I spoke to, that of that 14,000, 4,015 are those ones which are fully under category one. We do not have ID numbers. So for now, we don't consider them as real appeals, because we're not sure whether they are indeed appeals, or there are even duplicates of what we have already done. So the 1372 are the ones that I spoke to, are the means test ones for beneficiaries, which have referred back to SASSA. And the 5069 are the ones that we have then inquiries that were also reducing from the target, which then leaves us with a number of 8,225 to be considered in the remaining 3 months. These are the new appeals that we have received from the minister's office and also from the legal service, but we have referred them to SASSA. Because in terms of the new Social Assistance Amendment Act, all applications for appeals must be reconsidered by SASSA, which means SASSA must first reconsider its decision in terms of rejecting the grant or doing whatever in terms of the status of the beneficiary. So these are the matters that we have received, and we have seen referred back to SASSA for reconsideration, and then people can then come back and appeal. We have informed them accordingly to say, we have since referred your matter back to SASSA, and we are advising you to apply for reconsideration with SASSA. So this is what the breakdown of what we did in terms of the backlog, the 5,226 that I spoke about earlier on, that we have adjudicated over the period of time until July. This is what we have communicated, because what we are doing that we previously were having a backlog in terms of communicating outcomes to appellants. But now we have kept up in terms of our communication. We have already communicated 53,897, which refers to include also the backlog for last financial year. But currently our system is that appeals are communicated within 1 week of adjudication. So it means if decisions that are taken today, by next week the letters are issued out to the appellant, so that we manage the space and communication and also give us an opportunity to implement the outcomes thereof. New appeals as we've said earlier on, that we also agreed that we're going to do new appeals, 90 days of receipt. These are the numbers that we've adjudicated so far. We're having the, our numbers for new appeals is at this point low because of the reconsideration process, in that all the rejection letters I have, all the application letters I have rejected, they still have to be reconsidered. So this is what we've received so far, 750, over the period May, June, July. So what the challenge that we are facing in terms of making sure that we succeed is that we are still dependent on SASSA for appearance records, in that the people appeal, in that they just submit a letter of application for appeal or on a particular form, but all the records are with SASSA in terms of what happened. The grant application, the medical record, if it's about the medical grant or if it's a means test issue, all the bank details and the income statistics. Those are the kind of information. And also, we're also experiencing adequate insufficient records on file, simply because some of the files, like we're talking here, we're referring to backlog matters. They're all files. SASSA has already started the process of destroying files, so we don't find files in various areas. And in some other instances, the records are not identified or are not available from the various centers because of the nature and the time between the appeal being considered and the time that the person has made his first application for a grant. And also an availability of files or appellant records from various offices, inconsistent address details of appellants, because in some instances, appellants have given us addresses because we are having a challenge of return to sender in terms of the letters that we are sending to appellants because they've moved areas. So we are still trying to see how best you can deal with that, because we have referred to appellants to say this is the outcome of your application or the outstanding information that we need from you, but we are not getting feedback because we receive letters back that says that person is no more in that particular address. And also there's still a delay in terms of implementation of reconsideration process by SASSA, which we believe that now there will be some movement in terms of going forward, but that has also been the reason for the reduced intake in terms of numbers of new appeals. So also what has been a challenge is lack of management information system that will assist us to have integration between our system as appeals tribunal and SASSA institution, so that when people appeal, we don't have to go to SASSA ask for information. In terms of system interface, we just go into the system and then find all the records of that particular process. But that process also is underway. We hope that at some point in time we'll have that kind of integration that will allow us that interface to say when people appeal, already we are able to manage, or when they appeal at the initial stage at SASSA level, SASSA immediately transmit the information to us so that when we do consider the appeals, we don't have to look for information because the information is already on system. So that is all from us, Chair. Thank you. I want to recommend that this report be taken as it is, as progress from 1st of April until the 31st of July.
Thanks very much, Mr. Demokweli. Any comments? Yes. Yeah, I think we want... Hi, Mashama Itekin. We'll get your chance. Okay, let me take this opportunity to appreciate the report as tabled by the Appeals Tribunal to us, and I've noted that there's a lot of progress that has been made here. And I know that during 2005, the MECs used to be faced with piles and piles of appeals that were done by the politicians, but now we are far ahead in terms of improving this particular process. Honorable Mube, and Honorable Makate, Honorable Mashudi, Honorable Mashamaite, and Honorable Blake.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I just want to get more clarity. You are having remaining backlog appeals remaining, right? The first one being 8,275, and appeals received via ministry was referred back to SASSA 1,078, and
Yeah. What I would want to know is the deadline, which is October something, to say, are you certain that by this deadline of you having supposed to have dealt with all the backlog, are you going to meet it's end of August today or tomorrow? According to your pace, are you going to meet that deadline, or you are going to ask for extension and come back and ask for that extension? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to talk to the issue around the challenges. You know, where I'm seated, I'm wondering. Because, for example, the issue of inadequate or insufficient records on file, lack of management information system. How do we intend, you know, dealing with this situation? Particularly, I'm raising this question because yesterday we had a meeting with a provincial staffer, which one of their challenges was around the issue of the information capturing or information, how they link with their national office. So I just want to check, how do we intend, you know, dealing with the situation? And Mrs. Regina, you are aware that I'm still going to have a meeting with you immediately after this around what derived from our meeting that we had yesterday. So I just wanted to check.
Mm-hmm. No, we want to hear what you were sharing with Raymond Kwele officially now. Okay,
Honorable Plenty. Mine is on the, I don't know whether it's the system, the protocol, but why, I just want to check with the tribunal, the appeal tribunal. Why do appellants referred back to SASA? And we people who are appealing, who are actually aggrieved, complain directly to the appellate board because SASA is the institution that have rejected the application. So if SASA have rejected the application and they send their appeal to the appeal board to say, look, our application has been rejected, so we want you to intervene. So why are you sending back to SASA again to collect the information? Can't you, as an organization, as a body, can't you summon information from SASA to yourself so that you are able to deal with it? Look, for example, you indicated that some of the appeals have been sent through the ministry and we have referred them back to SASA. Can't you hold the information to yourself and request SASA, if SASA has additional information to submit to yourself without referring the appellant back to the institution? That's what I wanted to check.
Yeah, you can respond.
Okay, Chair, I think we'll try. In terms of the ability to finish the backlog by the end of September, like I said, Chair, we are on course. We are going to be able to manage that. And the only rider is that, remember I spoke about the no IDs, that the challenge we have now is that we may not have all the responses on time. So, but we have put systems in place to say even if they come beyond the 30th of September, we'll still consider them because we have communicated. So we're not going to cut them out, say, now because they missed the deadline. We are now saying we are close. So in terms of our processes, because already by now we have improved our outcomes in terms of what we have done to date in terms of August, so we are sure that by the end of September we'll manage to clear the backlog. In terms of how to manage, I think Ms. Finan will also assist us in that regard, how to manage inadequate records on file. Because, I mean, we are solely dependent on us in terms of records. Because we only receive applications for appeal. And then all the records in terms of what transpired are with us. So we have to go back to SASSA, and we do that. We don't say to appellants they must go back to SASSA to request information. The only sense where we refer matters back to SASSA are matters in terms of what the Act provided to say that they should be reconsidered first before we consider the mass appeal, or where there were beneficiaries not able to appeal to the tribunal, or then say go back to SASSA for SASSA to deal with this matter. We are not referring back, but in terms of information, we are not asking our parents to go to SASSA to get information for us. We are the ones who are communicating SASSA to say, we have this list of 1,000 applications, can you provide us with their records so that we are able to proceed with the appeal? Thank you.
Any other follow-up questions? Oh, you are fine.
You are fine now. No, let me take this opportunity to thank Mr. Mukwili and his team for the good work they are doing. Please keep up the good work in this appeals tribunal. We really appreciate it a lot as a committee. And this takes me to the NDA. We didn't say anything on NDA. I think it's important, Mrs. Ntlapo. I'm sure you have observed in the nature of the questions and interaction that was coming up from the members of the committee that there is a great interest by the committee members as far as the NDA, because it touches on the issues of an ordinary person in South Africa. It touches on the issues of poverty, job creation, and everything else that will culminate to a better life for our members. So we will be monitoring and also calling you from time to time. I think we are impressed by the presentation that we have made today. The fact that we have had a clear project program, formulation from step one to the last step that indicates how do we indicate going forward as far as improving in that regard as far as projects are concerned. We thank you very much, and we know that we are going to improve a lot in terms of ensuring that the projects that are established and those that are having problems are improved. And the fact that we want to see more of those community enterprises, and we know with the new team that we have in your capacity, you will definitely do that. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yes, I don't see the name. Say it.
Yes.
Okay, because I don't see your handwriting, you write like it.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I just want to say to the NDA that we as a committee appreciate your work done in the different communities and also the outcomes there. Thank you very much.
I did say so. Didn't you hear me? I was going on and on and on. Okay. Thanks very much for emphasizing it. Okay. This is the committee, I think. Okay. And the members of the committee, can they please remain behind? Yes. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to be able to do it.
Let's quickly get to
committee's leading us.
To what we are saying.